Thank you and good afternoon. Robert Carpenter Jr. served as the Phillies team president from 1943 through 1972. His family was awarded the Phillies franchise for over $400,000 on November 23rd, 1943. Apologize for the date. His father, Robert Sr., put up the money and named his son Robert as the team president. At the time, at the age of 28, Robert Jr. became the youngest president in National League history. Carpenter was installed as the team president, according to Rich Westcott. With the World War II at its height and facing the draft, you know, you needed someone to run your organization. So Herb Pannock, the former Red Sox farm director and a Carpenter family friend, was hired a week later as the Phillies general manager in team history shortly after the Carpenters took over. Carpenter said this in his first news conference. Herb will be in charge of the operation of the entire ball clubs, Carpenter said. That includes itself the farm system we hope to develop. And the scouting staff, he's the boss. I expect him to go in the Army soon. And when I go, Herb will operate the Phillies himself. Westcott also wrote, the first thing I want to do is build up the farm system, he said at the first press conference. We're not going to beat anybody's brains out by trying to get a good club right off the bat, but we're going to start working for one systematically. Carpenter Jr. announced a two-point plan for which he hopes for a winning team in 3 years. He said he would do the following. He would consult Mr. Mack, and he would leave his manager alone. Now, addressing point A in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette article, Carpenter is a close friend of Mr. Mack at the Athletics, which have a working agreement with the minor league system that also Carpenter also heads, the Wilmington Blue Rocks, which I'll mention about in a few minutes. He's been in the habit of consulting Mr. Mack on baseball matters and hopes to continue. As Carpenter's response to point B, He would not get any interference from me or anyone else. My policy is that the team manager is the undisputed boss 2 hours before and after the game. I will never second guess him. He stands or falls on his own ability. Now he has his 5-year plan. He would improve the farm system, which also included hire Joe Reardon, which was Pennock's assistant in Boston, as the team's first ever farm director. He had minor league affiliates, hire more scouts, and invest on spend on new talent. In response to this, he said, I want to get a working agreement with a Class AA team, buy a Class A and B club, and a couple of clubs with Class D ratings. This, I figure, will take a couple years, maybe 3, to get results. By results, I don't necessarily mean a pennant winner, but a team that will be up there fighting and not just a dormant of the National Leaguers. In a 1964 Sporting News article, after he gained control of the Phillies in late 1943, Carpenter observed, it will take at least five years for our farm system to make the Phillies a contender, first for the division and then a pennant. Also in 1943, the Phillies employed 4 scouts, William Burke, Jocko Collins, Bill Kilifer, and Cy Morgan. Kilifer was released by William Cox, who was Carpenter's predecessor, and part of the reason why the Carpenters took over in the first place was because Cox was found to be betting on the Phillies and was subsequently banned by then Commissioner Keystone Mountain Landis. The team's farm system had 10 different affiliates, hired 18 scouts between 1944 and 1947. He hired scout Johnny Nee in 1946 and then promoted him to head scout. $211,000 in bonuses were spent within his first year of ownership, and within the first 4 years, $1.25 million, something unheard of considering if anyone knows the history of ownership in Philadelphia leading up to that point, they were not exactly the most spending types. What Carpenter represented was a breath of fresh air to Philadelphia fans, given the fact that he and his family were serious about making the Phillies contenders, something they have not seen in nearly 30 years. Now, the next slide will show you, these were the Whiz kids that were signed under Pennock between 1944 and 1947. Of these, of these, the one that down at the bottom, Kurt Simmons, was the most at that most money that Pennock had signed, you know, to pay for an amateur when he signed them at 1947. However, Pennock would never see his plans come to fruition because in 1948 he passed away in New York City. Now at that point the Phillies' won loss record gradually improved, except in the year 1946 when they lost over 100 games. And within a week's time of Pennock's death, Carpenter Jr. took over as the Phillies' acting general manager on February 5th, 1948. Until 1954, when Roy Haney was hired, the Phillies improved their win total from 66 in 1948 to 91 in 1950, and the franchise's second National League title. During the six-year tenure, the Phillies had winning records four times, including four of its five. And during within this period of time, they upgraded their farm system by adding 15 different minor league affiliates and hiring 24 different scouts. Now, one thing I just wanted to mention about during Pennock's tenure, he also hired the first female scout in 1946. Her name was Edith Houghton. Now, for the sake of brevity and time of this presentation, Carpenter Jr. made the following moves. He made 14 trades, a dozen purchases, sold 16 players, acquired 7 players through the Rule 5 Major League portion of the phase of the draft, acquired 6 through waivers, and signed another 28 amateur free agents who made the major leagues. Now, of these 28, these were among the notable ones: Roy Face, Turk Farrell, and Hal Woodishek. In my presentation, I will discuss the deals that worked and the ones that didn't. I will determine using the following: Bill James's approximate value. I will also use Pete Palmer's linear weights and the Fangraphs version of wins above replacement. Carpenter's failure to integrate the Phillies during his tenure as the acting general manager will also be discussed. Carpenter Jr. became the Phillies' acting general manager during a critical time in his team's history. While he had a hand in helping the Phillies win the 1950 pennant, this presentation will take a closer and advanced statistical look at how he fared this position. So one would ask, who was Bob Carpenter Jr.? He was born on August 31st, 1915 in Newcastle, Delaware. His parents were Robert Sr. and his mother, Margarita, was a member of the DuPont family. He also attended Tower Hill School, which still exists. It's a private school located in Delaware. He attended Duke University and played football as well as baseball there. He married Mary Kay Phelps in 1938, and he also worked for DuPont in public relations for 2 years, but stopped because he was very unhappy. But he also had a very diverse background as well. He promoted boxing and boxers. He raised Chesapeake Bay Retrievers. He was a 1937 Delaware State Badminton Champion. But he also was a leader in a number of different organizations. He was president of Wilmington Sports Club, the vice president of Delaware Horse and Steeplechase Association, owner of the Wilmington Blue Bombers, which is an American basketball league, president and owner of the Wilmington Blue Rocks, the original one, and received the 1943 Wilmington Junior Chamber of Commerce Distinguished Service Award. Now here's some of the deals. Now the one deal that did not work was the Johnny Wright-Rostick and the Eddie Miller trade. But before I mention them, pay attention to a couple of these quotes because you hear a different tone later in this presentation. In a 1948 Sporting News article, he on becoming the acting general manager, he said the two things. This is a permanent job. I was always the policy man. As president, we'll simply combine policy with operation. Furthermore, he said, I never considered bringing a man outside the organization to take over Herb's job, nothing doing. We spent 4 years building our organization, setting our policy, making our plans for victory in his future. An outsider may have a good ideas, but different ones. I want the Pennock system based on strong and sound farm system set up to continue. He also had said this, we're going to stand toe-to-toe and bid against everyone for every youngster who we feel has a chance to make good in the major leagues. Our policy of being generous to our farm players has paid off, and it satisfied Penning winning combination that won 5 championships in the minors last year, a record better than any other major league club, including the Brooklyn Dodgers. Now, this was the one deal that did not work, because what happened was Eddie Miller, who was a highly touted infielder, not much on the batting side, but defensively, he had a reputation. He also did not hit well. He was also a midseason All-Star on multiple occasions. But however, because of injuries and assorted ailments the following season and a half, which was on the bad side, but on the bright side, this allowed Granny Hamner to take over the shortstop position, which he practically remained with the rest of his Phillies tenure. Ryan Rostek, on the other hand, he flourished with the Reds in his 4 seasons. He was a multiple All-Star, though not much the slugging type. He hit well for average, played well defensively, and Ryan Rostek was one of several Phillies during the 1950s who the Phillies would trade or give up in another acquisition and actually reacquire later. This is one of the first key ones that actually worked. Dick Sisler for Ralph LaPointe and $70,000. Dick Sisler, as anyone know, had come with a pedigree. He was the son of Hall of Famer George Sisler. And also as far as Sisler, when he didn't see a lot of playing time in St. Louis. But with the Phillies, he played in the outfield, he played a little first base, but as it turned out, he wasn't really the best glove man at first base. So he practically pretty much played his first part of the season for the Phillies in left field. But when Wakeus got hurt the following season, he had to go play first base. And when Wakeus was well again in 1950, following the unfortunate shooting in 1949, Sisler resumed his role as a team's left fielder. And as anyone knows, Dick Sisler, he won the more famous home runs in Phillies history. However, the following season for Sisler, he didn't hit as well, showing his age a little bit, and therefore he was subsequently dealt in the deal that also added, include one of the biggest deals during Carpenter's tenure. LaPointe, on the other hand, he just lasted one season with the Cardinals and was never seen again in the big league game. Jim Constanti was maybe one of Carpenter Jr.'s best acquisitions of all the bunch. To give you an idea of what Constanti did, or at least how he impacted or helped the team in this way, these are the following names that were used for the Phillies in relief in 1948. Troy Bicknell, Walt Dubiel, Ken Heitzelman, Ed Husser, and Sam Nahem. Nahem was released and Dubiel was traded in the Eddie Wakeus deal. Now, Constanti, who was 31 years old at the time, he was acquired through a minor league working agreement at the time from Toronto, which was then the Boston Braves affiliate. To see how he paid off for the Phillies, listen to the following awards that Constanti won alone in 1950. MVP, Sporting News Pitcher of the Year and National League Pitcher of the Year. AP Male Athlete of the Year. Before going to the Yankees in 1954, Constanti finished his Phillies career with the following relief records. Games, finished, innings, and saves. Overall, he pitched 281 games relief. His approximate value was 34, a 4.0 total player rating, 3 WAR, and 60 win shares. Other notable trades was the deal that brought Eddie Wakeus and Hank Barber. And I apologize for mispronouncing. Eddie Wakeus basically gave Phillies this. With his trade, he had Dick Sisler move to the outfield. Wakeus gave them a glove guy, a person who can get on base, hit towards the top of the order. Wakeus, despite the unfortunate incident, managed to return the following year and win the Comeback Player of the Year award. As for this deal, really resulted in more or less a wash, because Dubiel and Bowery canceled each other because Bowery only lasted a season and a half. Dubiel had modest time with the Cubs. However, Dutch Leonard, who was in his 40s at that time, appeared at a couple All-Star games, primarily filled in as a relief role for the Cubs during his tenure. Practically much the numbers between Eddie Wakis and Dutch Leonard were practically pretty much similar. Now, Dick Whitman did not exactly pick up, you know, really good advanced metrics. He had a 2 approximate value, a negative 1 total player rating, a negative 7 WAR in 94 games. His biggest value for the team was his pinch hitting. He led Major League Baseball in pinch hitting in 1950. He also led the league in at-bats. I gotta speed this along here. Authors Lieb and Baumgartner reported about Ben Chapman's dismissal that the 51 Phillies did not do as well. They had 71-83 record. Most of the people did not repeat their performances, and was virtually a disappointment. Now, one important quote that I should mention, two of them. A headline in the Sporting News in 1950, Connie recovers spirits, sees 6 flags in a row for the Phillies. Now, the quote that I want to mention here from Robin Roberts in the book he co-wrote with Paul Rogers about the Whiz Kids. I've often wondered whether the Whiz Kids won too soon. Brooklyn, of course, suffered heartbreaking defeats in 1950 and 51 before winning 4 or 5 next pennants. What would that kind of adversity have improved us in the long run? If we had blown that October 1 game in Brooklyn, would our organization have made moves to shake up our team? Because we won, did we stand too pat? Now, amongst Carpenter's objectives that was quoted in the Sporting News in 1951, he intends to have a winner at all costs. He's not content with not or being near the top. 2, he's not going to sit and see his stars grow old. He's going to have replacements for them in the same manner as the Yankees and Cardinals of old. Thus, he would get rid of his men in a sharp, shrewd manner before they have outlived their usefulness and will get full value of their services. The Phillies can expect to stay with the club so as long as they produce at top speed. Well, one of those casualties was Dick Sisler because, as I mentioned, he didn't fare as well. And therefore, the deal in trade 1951, which was one of the largest during Carpenter's tenure, Semenik, Pellegrini, Sisler, and Niall Jordan for Connie Ryan, who was a short-term fix at the infield, Smokey Burgess, who at that time was a 24-year-old catcher, and Howie Fox, who pitched minimally for the Phillies. Another trade to follow that Bubba Church for Jair Rostek and Ken Peterson. And in 1953, Russ Meyer for Earl Torgerson. Now, the only player in the 1953 roster that was still there, the only one that really produced for Carpenter, was Bob Miller, who he signed in 1948 out of the University of Detroit Mercy for $2,500. Now, as far as amateur free agent successes go, not really much, but he was more probably well known for some free agent busts. In 1950, Tom Casagrande for $40,000, Ted Kaczynski for $100,000 in 1951, Hugh Radcliffe, $40,000 in 1948, who never played a major game like Casagrande, and right-handed pitcher Tom Qualters, who was the only bonus baby during the 1953 through 1957 tenure that Carpenter also signed. Other notable dudes, Del Wilbur, Del Wilbur, who was signed as a Rule 5 draft choice, Carl Drews, who had some success coming out of the minor league working agreement. Eddie's story with Steve O'Neill was an interesting one because prior to this being let go, Carpenter Jr., despite the Phillies' drop in 1-loss record, gave Sawyer a 3-year extension following the 1951 season, basically giving him his vote of confidence. Now also throughout this time, Sawyer had to implement disciplinary measures because he felt the team was getting too complacent. He just felt that the focus was not there as it was a few years prior. Now, the other thing to point out was, publicly, it was Sawyer was the one that made these decisions and Carpenter Jr. backed him. However, it was later revealed following the firing, a source said, Cruz Morales Carpenter Jr. was the one who came up with the idea of these disciplinary measures. There was the increase of team replacement and development as the team got more successful. There was the increased cost of fielding minor league teams. There's the cost of signing the ball players. Now, one quote I want to mention from Eddie Sawyer. We built the club to win 1951, 1952. Is it possible to say that you can win a pennant a year too early? And I doubt if it is really. Then when we did it too early, there's no explanation, though. Looking back, I think the real reason we never came again, that was Simmons was became the 20-game winner he never thought he'd be. The most he'd ever won was 18 in 1964 for the Cardinals. And we got no help at all from the farm systems. Now, Ben Chapman, he pointed out that the proof was the pudding in the eating. The Phillies haven't developed players, the ones that kind of produced the farm system became the big leagues. Phillies had to acquire new talents and, for the major purchase of trade. Major McDonald said Herb Pennock's death really hurt our ball club. He was the guy who brought the scouts from all over and signed all our great players. He also brought in good major league minor league managers like Sawyer to develop the kids. And Bob Carpenter would never interfere with Herb. They had a beautiful relationship. If Herb would have won 3 or 4 pennants in the 1950s, his death left a large void. And unfortunately, because of time, I'll have to wrap this up with the Ed Lynn quote. The real tragedy of the Phillies may well not that they've been flying under false colors. Carpenter deliberately went into the bonus baby business rather than the used star business. Because his master plan called for an organization that would feed the team top player year by year. A few years ago, when the debate was hot, the Phillies were pointed out to as baseball's prize proof, that a winning team could be built upon this foundation. It seems now against all logic that the Phillies' experience shows while a bonus baby program may produce quick results, of the few that made the grade immediately, it may be the worst possible way to build for the future. Unfortunately, because of time, I did not get a chance to go into the lack of integration, something that was pre and post Carpenter tenure, as well as what happened to Carpenter as to why he stepped down, and also what happened to Carpenter after he went back to being team president. I want to acknowledge very quickly Baseball Hall of Fame. I want to acknowledge members of Connie Mack chapter for coming out today, for their support, as well as my friends and family for their patience, and for you, the audience, for your patience as well, for coming out here and listening to my presentation today. Thank you very much.
I just wanted to ask you, what was the name of that woman scout? You said they had the first scout. Is that the first scout in the major leagues, or was that the first scout for this?
Edith Houghton was the first female scout to be hired by the Phillies. She was hired by the Phillies in 1946, and she was with the Phillies through 1954.
Okay, what was her name?
Edith Houghton.
Cook?
H-O-U-G-H-T-O-N.
The key thing is that they were young and they were white, and all the other teams hired all the black players, the Phillies never did, and relatively speaking, they just went down the drain.
Well, that was one of the reasons. I think the important point to mention about the lack of integration was that Carpenter felt he didn't need as long as his players are producing. He didn't want somebody just to sit on the bench and collect dust there. He wanted somebody that was major league ready, and not just that. Unlike Connie Mack has said, the reason why he didn't integrate right away was because he didn't want to ruffle the feathers of Mountain Landis. Carpenter was just simply going along party lines. But the thing was, he did sign Ted Washington, who was an 18-year-old across the river from Camden, New Jersey. But he never actually played because he had to be in the Korean War, and unfortunately he never reported. They did have two players already that they signed in their minor league farm system, were African American, but they came from other organizations. The saddest thing was even the players, Richie Ashford noted about
how this team could have been successful. He mentioned, you know, how many times Roy Kemp had told, I wanted to play for the Phillies, but the reason why they didn't want me was because of my skin color.
But they had a couple of black players in their minor league system.
But those were not originally Philly signees. They were, I think one of them was from Cleveland, and I'm not sure about the other one. But it wasn't until Dick Allen came along in 1964, they didn't have a major impact player from their farm system that was African American. Now it wasn't until after. When Roy Haney took over, they signed Pancho Herrera, they signed Hank Mason, that were from the Negro Leagues. But the first impact guy from the minor league farm system didn't come until 17 years later, and it was when Johnny Kennedy, who was in there, who integrated the Phillies in 1957, there were over 55 former Negro Leaguers already, that had already played Major Baseball before he played even in a single game for the Phillies. So it was a major bugaboo, and unfortunately that was part of the reason of their demise in that decade. Any other questions?
I'm Tyler Porcello. Give this a round of applause.